You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
Your girl may save her. Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when you turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show today. Oh, I'm so happy you're here, and I'm happy I'm here, and I'm happy that our guest is here today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Our guest is someone who will help us all think about school and education and the way we think about thinking and teaching. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Sure. Kelly Berry. I'm a second-year doctoral student at Kansas State University, and also the Indigenous Initiatives Research Associate at Kansas State, too. I want to thank you for having me back for a second round of engaging conversations and look forward to the conversation today.
Oh, I'm so happy that you're here. Thank you for joining us and bringing so much wisdom with you. Wow. Well, I want to ask you about your title. You have a lot of responsibility and a lot of things to think about. Would you tell us what exactly you do at KU?
Sure. I work in the College of Education. My supervisor is my major professor, and I help out where pretty much anything they need me to do. Right now, working on Indigenous Day in October. I'm actually traveling up to Manhattan during that month to help out with speakers and also present on a panel of Indigenous Ways. I help out with just you name it. You name it, Dr. Karima, I am there. I'm co-teaching a graduate course right now with one of my mentors at K-State, so that's another 3 weeks. So any logistics they need done, any presentations, I help out with pretty much everything they need me to do.
Well, I am so happy for them that they have you. And I'm happy for you that you have this wonderful opportunity. Could we talk about indigenizing education?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
How do we do it?
Right now my research is the pre-boarding school era in Indian education. As I said before, Indian education in the curriculums kind of start from the boarding school, which is the late 1800s, and go to the present. You know, Deborah Holland, the Secretary of Interior, released a boarding school report just recently that talks about stories of boarding schools from the late 18th century to the present. So, but I've taken a step back to go before then because there was Indian education. It was under colonial rule with about maybe what I've seen about 5 to 6 Indian schools that were designed to teach the native children the ways of the dominant population. Mm-hmm. So you could go back to Harvard Indian College. Yeah. There's also Bradford Indian College. There's also Fort Crestana in Virginia. And there's other schools that were taking place at a time that was having Indian education in the ways of the dominant population. So that's my research right now. And if you're talking about incorporating the culture into the classrooms, that's what I'm working on too, is assisting classroom practitioners with bringing that culture, indigenizing education in the classroom, teaching about multiple perspectives from indigenous lens, and just having that opportunity not to marginalize our native students in the classroom.
Oh, wow. This is so fascinating to me, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation with you, because parents are getting ready for a new school year. Teachers and educators are starting to work on lesson plans and curricula and all of those things. And this is a wonderful opportunity for us to enter the conversation about indigenization and decolonization and how we teach it, how we talk about it. So I'm really excited to hear much more. Let's start with your research. Can you tell us how you decided on this particular topic?
I was always interested in Indian education because of it's part of my culture. It's part of my family. I am a product of the boarding school era. My great-grandfather attended Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania back in the day, and actually that's where my name comes from. It was changed during the boarding school era.
Wow.
Originally, it was a different name, but it was changed to Barry as far as what the dominant population went by. So that's where my interest falls. We have records of him attending, pictures of him attending and playing in the band at Carlisle. So I've always been interested. I've always been interested in being an Indigenous instructor. But it really came to prominence 3 weeks ago when I attended a teacher's institute in Virginia, and Columbia, Williamsburg, Virginia. And I actually learned about their pre-Revolutionary War Indian education. So that's really kind of hyped up my interest, in Indian education, and learning about that, those perspectives that aren't taught in the classroom. I asked a couple of colleagues recently about some of these Indian schools that were pre-Revolutionary War, and they said, I've never heard of that, Kelly. I've never even seen that in the studies, but it's there. It's not in that new report by Deborah Holland, but they're there as part of her history. They're just not the history that is taught. That's where my interest is right now, is to further that and learn about the Indian education that invisible in some aspect, but I want to bring that to the out to the public.
Please do. I can't wait till you write a book about all this. It's going to be amazing. You know, it'll be a documentary one day on PBS or something. And because this is really fascinating, why do you think that era gets erased?
There's not a lot of documentation.
Okay.
You have to go find research in your own buried in books. And there was a study by a doctor from the University of William & Mary, two of those. They had to go to Europe to find documents talking about those era, Indian education schools during that time of pre-Revolutionary War. So you have to go and find that research. And sometimes it's not as evident in the writings. If you were asking me, could you name some of the student names of those schools? They weren't listed on the rosters or anything, so we don't know exactly how many were in the schools or what their names were. There are a few, so it's been lost to history. Those, but the research is there, but you have to go find it. Take the time to find the research and look for specifically what you're looking for.
Sounds like a good road trip. You'll get to do some good traveling for your research. I'm interested in that in so many ways. I think about a lot of anecdotal evidence, colloquial evidence, where, you know, we have heard many times, especially in the Southeast tribes, of one-room schoolhouses, that type of approach for tribal communities, you know, and yet now there's no records. There's people said, oh, my grandpa went over there, and that's where he went to school. But there's not a lot of documentation. And so as you look at the compare and contrast between the residential school and boarding school and, of course, all the historical grief and trauma that comes with that, is the prior form of Indian education traumatic?
I would say so. They were designed to do the same thing that the boarding schools of the 18th century, 19th century, they were designed in those formats to teach Native kids the religion, teach them the dominant ways. So it was the same pedagogy, if you want to say that.
Sure, yes.
Mm-hmm. A different time period and different instruction, but it was the same format and designed for to take away that culture and introduce a new form of culture that was unfamiliar to the native populations.
Wow. Is there a difference between assimilation and colonization?
I think it depends on the format, but to me, yes. And then, no, there's no difference. You know, you're assimilating to the dominant culture. You're taking on the ways of that dominant culture, which is colonization. And for me right now, you know, when I first started as an instructor 11 years ago, mm-hmm. I didn't teach in color. I didn't teach in culture.
Mm-hmm.
I just taught what the book said, and that was my instruction. But as you progress in your instruction, or my instruction, I'm decolonizing myself, my mindset, to teach mm-hmm. in color now, to make sure I don't marginalize my students. So there's, to me, it's no difference. It's just about how you proceed as an instructor as far as decolonization and explain to the students what assimilation is, what colonization is, and how it affects present-day generations.
Of course. I love what you're saying about decolonizing yourself. How, practically speaking, how do you do that?
Well, there's a framework that I use. It's one of my mentors. His name is Dr. Cornell P.B. Wardy. Mm-hmm. He's a professor at Redis at Portland State University, and he's actually one I'm co-teaching a graduate course at K-State right now. And he has a framework called the Transformational Indigenous Praxis Model, where it has four steps where you decolonize. The first step is where you're unaware that you're teaching in colonialized manners. And then as you proceed the steps, you understand that, hey, teach this part, teach students about this, make sure you give a holistic view of instruction from multiple lenses, multiple perspectives. And then when you get to that fourth stage, you're that teacher of teachers. You understand what decolonization means as far as instruction and your mannerism and your thinking. So I use that model. We call it the TIPM for short, the Transformational Indigenous Praxis Model.
Well, I really appreciate you explaining that to us because that sounds tremendously useful. Were you surprised to find out that you were colonized?
I was, because mm-hmm. when I, as a junior faculty, I had no idea about how to, I guess, introduce culture beyond the textbook into the classroom. You know, I would give whatever the textbook said. If it's 2 pages, then that's what I would use in my instruction.
Mm-hmm.
But as I found out about, realized what decolonization meant, I started to introduce guest speakers. I started to introduce activities that were culturally relevant to my class.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said before, didn't teach in color, but now I'm learning how to teach in color and being effective doing that.
Yes. Oh, thank you. And thank you for doing the work. You know, thank you for diving deep into this and reflecting and then actually transforming your own teaching and classrooms. I'm wondering, you know, there's so many things that you're saying that are just so important, but I really want to go back to this teach in color, because I feel like there's so many conversations about teaching right now, and laws, legislation is changing teaching and what you can say and can't say and teach and what can you expose students to. And so help some of our friends who may be educators, who may be in the classroom. What does it really mean to teach in color?
For me, it's about meeting the student needs. Mm-hmm. And I'll bring up critical race theory. It's a big debate, big topic right now. But for me, I'm learning about all the other critical race theories that are out there, such as tribal critical race theory, which is meeting the needs of the native students. There's Asian critical race theory. There's Latino critical race theory. So I'm learning those to meet the needs of our students in the mm-hmm. classroom. So that's how I bring in culture to the classroom, is that I'm always advocating learning new teaching knowledge and instructional techniques. That way the students benefit from your instruction, and not just the one spectrum instruction like one of my colleagues has. One of my colleagues teaches in one way, but I've always helped him with teaching in different ways and multiple lenses.
I think that's so important, and really for your students as well. And lately, I've heard some very surprising things from some of my colleagues. You know, I've actually heard people say, you know, why should we teach all these different cultures? Aren't we all just one race, the human race? Isn't it divisive to talk about the Trail of Tears or slavery or some of the other things that have happened, internment camps, just, you know, many, many things throughout history? Shouldn't we just teach the positive parts? And I was so surprised, and I just couldn't wait to bring that to you and find out what you have to say about that.
I think, to be fair to students, we have to teach all parts of our history. Yes, we do have the positives. We do have some, you know, dark stains in our history, but it gives a full instruction to our students to learn about who we are as a country. It's not always positive, and it's sometimes negative, like I said, but we have to do justice to our instruction to make sure that we give a full view of history, where we came from, where we're at, and where we're going.
Well, perhaps we could add some practical steps to that. I mean, how do educators have these conversations or these lessons about really painful parts of the past?
Well, I can't speak for anyone else, for any of the instructors out there, but for me, it's about starting those conversations with the voices of not being hesitant to talk about certain areas of history.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a way to make it conducive to learning in the classroom. You know, when I talk about some of the issues that are hot topics in my diversity classes, I make sure I give a voice to everyone in the classroom. We all have our own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to make sure I tell them, hey, this is everybody's opinion. If you disagree, say you disagree, but explain why you disagree. Give evidence to why you disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have these volleyball back and forth discussions in class. Tomorrow, I start teaching my second summer class at the local university here, one of my diversity classes, and we're going to have a topic tomorrow, probably that's sensitive, but we're going to have a, you know, insightful, engaging conversation. It's about how you set the atmosphere. It's about how you set the tone about having those conversations and make sure everybody has a chance to express their opinions.
Okay. What happens when we don't have these difficult conversations?
For me, in my classrooms, it hinders instruction.
Mm-hmm.
It hinders what the course is about. Depending on what the course is about, let's say for me, it's about sociology and diversity. If we don't have it, then I'm not giving you an effective view or a full view of what diversity is. I'm not giving you a full view of what history is if I'm teaching my history classes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that students have this holistic view of education that is not always the rosy, you know, view that we have sometimes. And those, if you don't have this conversation in classes, then I, as an instructor, feel like I limited my students' learning in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Well said. And that makes me want to ask you what diversity is. We throw the word around a lot, and I think a lot of times people think that diversity is just race or just gender. But what is diversity?
Diversity to me is all aspects, you know, from learning to thinking. And you're right, we do think as diversity as being, you know, based on color, which, you know, when I first started in instruction 11 years ago, that's what I thought. But
mm-hmm.
as I, you know, learned more, researched more, taught more, it's about, for me, it's about diversity, is about the different styles of learning and instruction in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have different ways, a plethora of instructional techniques that I use to reach students. Because if I have 14 students in my class and 13 students learn one way, but this one last student doesn't learn that way, then I can tailor my instruction. I can draw from my repertoire and find a way for that student to learn. So diversity for me is in the classroom. It's about learning. You know, a lot of my colleagues ask me, why do you have so many teaching techniques? Because I just need one of those techniques to work. But if it does work, I can draw from other that. Mm-hmm. I can tailor the work to make sure those students are learning at the same rate and nobody falls behind.
Excellent. I mean, that's absolutely excellent, because I think some of diversity that we don't really talk about, or I don't hear people talk about often, you might, is the underlife of students. You know, some things, I mean, you can look at phenotype, for example, but that doesn't tell you anything about what that student is doing at home or what they're going through. You could look at what they're wearing and make an assessment of who they are. It's not going to tell you who they are. And so there's this amazing now kind of, their average student is in a different kind of environment. You know, there's an underlife. You know, a student that has two jobs may learn differently than a student that has a full scholarship and has time to study in the afternoon. Especially with, the current events and politics and all of that kind of thing, students are being shaped by something other than the education that they're receiving in the classroom. So how do we approach that? How do we approach the fact that students are coming out of different environments and maybe have a different, or having a different experience every day?
Well, for me, it's all about communication and building relationships. I check in with my students pretty much like two or three times a week, even if it's virtual or face-to-face. Mm-hmm. I check in with them two or three times a day. I check in with parents. I check in with, you know, other colleagues that they have to make sure that we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. And we're not missing things as far as instruction, or if they're having some kind of issues, you know, affecting them outside of class, I can work with them on. It's just about, you have to know your students. You have, mm-hmm. you can't just give them a number. Like, I had one class in the past that had 48 students.
Yeah.
And I know some instructors will say, well, just a number. To me, they're not a number. They're a person with a name, and mm-hmm. they're in this class for different reasons. So I want to make sure that if I can help in any way, you know, with them and their instruction, or work with them if they have a second job or family to take care of, that we're on the same page. And that's where I feel like I said, the communication relationship is vital with your students. You have to have that, or the instruction won't be there, as far as I see it.
I see your attitude and your heart towards your students as a form of indigenizing education, because in most of our traditional tribal cultures, everything happened in a circle. Right? People mattered. Relationships mattered. You learned from people by watching and doing things with them. Relationships were at the core of our initial indigenous education. And so I even see that as a way of indigenizing education as well, though you're going back to relationship. You're going back to humanity and empathy, hospitality, generosity. And I think that's a very brave and courageous thing to do. How's that working for you?
It's really opened my eyes to, as you said, empathy. Mm-hmm. I serve as, I mentee three faculty members right now. I've served as advisor for the Indigenous clubs. And coming from the culture, I understand what our students are going through. So I'm able to help them as far as my mentors have helped me.
Yeah.
I can help them with information and guidance, point them in the direction of where they need to go, what they need to, as far as opportunities for scholarships. And I know, you know, some of our culture is quiet and, you know, we kind of stand back a little bit, but I want to make sure the students are aware of what opportunities are out there, you know, if it's beyond high school or beyond college. And if I can help them open those opportunities up, then I'm going to do my best to make sure that I tell them and relay the information about anything that I think they will benefit from.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That is so wonderful. And I hope that more of our educators will think in terms of those relationships. We have a complicated, though, relationship with education as tribal people, don't we?
We have in the past, and in some aspects we do now, but right now we are exerting our educational sovereignty by having our tribal colleges, universities, which, you know, are, there's a plethora of them right now. They may be invisible to, you know, some society, but they are there for, you know, the culture to go and learn about cultural aspects within a college setting. I have to, in 2 weeks, I'm going to Haskell Indian Nations University to do a workshop with a colleague. So I'll be there learning about that tribal college up there. I'm not familiar with the tribal colleges and universities up north. We do have one here in Oklahoma, the College of the Muskogee Nation.
Yes.
But they are there for us to exert that sovereignty that we haven't had in the past. So that's one of the aspects I like about our culture, is that, you know, having those TCUs for short.
I think that's really important, too, because that intellectual and educational academic sovereignty places our students in positions to succeed. There are opportunities. People are rooting for you. People understand you. The other students can identify with you. And when you're in those environments, a lot of the barriers and obstacles that might be in the dominant culture institutions are not there. And so I really do thank our tribal colleges and our schools, tribal schools as well. You know, we have immersion schools and, you know, language academies and tribal schools for all ages. And I think that they're doing wonderful work, and I'm so glad that they're doing it. And so, okay, this is something that somebody asked me, and I couldn't wait to ask you. What does the future of Indigenous education look like? I mean, I understand now, and I understand then, but what's coming?
I see this as twofold. One is having the culture represented in the classroom more and more, not being invisible.
Yeah.
Where teachers do teach about every culture, not just the Indigenous culture, but make sure that students receive all those the cultural information. And for me, as a faculty member, it's more representation at the university level. If you look at the numbers, right, minuscule, but you know, a lot of the instructors are coming up through the, you know, PhD programs and the EdD programs, the JD programs. So we'll have that more faculty representation. And that's not what I want to, that's my trajectory, is to be faculty at the university level, you know, full-time or tenured. But that's where I see Indigenous education going, not just at the K through 12, but at the university level too.
I think that's so important for shaping the dialogue, for shaping the curriculum, for shaping even the canon, is to have folks in position to exert that kind of influence. And I appreciate the willingness that you have to study and to pursue this and to actually be able to transform higher education. I think that's tremendous. And so your perspective really matters. And it's very important. And I want to make sure that we talk about the students themselves. You know, I'm amazed at how many staff meetings I have sat in where people talked about the books, they talked about the technology, they talked about the curricula, they talked about the dates on the calendar, and didn't talk about the students, really. Just like, oh, they'll just be there. You know, it was like, okay. So what can you tell students right now that will help them to perhaps indigenize their own education?
For me, it's about reading and researching, you know, business books or articles, and relating them to your assignments in the classroom, relating them to the discussions in the classroom. You know, I always tell my native students to, if they always have a question about, well, Mr. Bear, I'm not really understanding this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them to go research and find something that's relevant to our culture and then bring it to the classroom and relate it to the classroom discussions. You're going to give other students, you'll expose other students to the culture, and you're also going to expand your intellectual bandwidth about how culture affects you and your classroom discussions. So I'm always advocating students to do more research and reading, but not necessarily just about this your specific culture, about how other cultures are affected and how to bring those voices into the classroom.
This is a fabulous conversation, and I'm so thankful that you're having it with us today. We have to go to commercial just for a moment. But when we come back, we're going to have another portion of this fantastic dialogue.
And you come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute. They told us we had it all, Jordan. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of oil.
I'm Rhett.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drum over here. It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about it.
I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dog's supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com. Click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring. It's volunteering in your community. It's shoveling a neighbor's snow or cutting an elderly person's grass for them or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's gonna freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at commemorativeairforce.org right now.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans, who we are, what we miss, to get back to each other, to life. But it's okay to have questions, like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org.
We are strong and we'll get through this together, but these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Have you been diagnosed with prostate cancer? You may be eligible to participate in a clinical research study for an investigational procedure called high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU. This is a minimally invasive procedure. It is radiation-free, may destroy prostate cancer cells, and potentially has few side effects. This investigational procedure is performed at no cost to the patient. Call today at 1-866-619-6026 or visit www.theprostatecancerstudy.com. Have you been diagnosed with prostate cancer? You may be eligible to participate in a clinical research study for an investigational procedure called high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU. Call today at 1-866-619-6026 or visit www.theprostatecancerstudy.com.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Or... Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something. Something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are. But I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Silent,
save her. Let her believe they get on her knees, they pray her, and never look back. What's the wolf?
When I was a kid, my granddaddy used to say that you needed to learn all you can learn. Because in life, you can either work with your mind or you can work with your back. And he felt like education was the most important thing to propel someone forward in life. And so I'm really excited that we have an expert on education. And would you please reintroduce yourself to us one more time?
Sure. Kelly Berry. I'm a second-year doctoral student at Kansas State University, and I'm also the Indigenous Initiatives Research Associate at K-State, too, and I'm also a citizen of the Apache Tribe of Oklahoma.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad that you're here. I really am. And so I want to give you a few minutes to talk to us about what you're interested in and passionate about, and I'm going to give you the mic right now and let you speak directly to our friends who are listening.
Sure. Thank you. My passion is I'm an instructor. I'm a classroom practitioner. I love being in a space where I can help guide students. I can help cultivate their minds in different areas and issues. I can plant the seed about this subject and have them kind of run with it, have them facilitate classroom meetings, classroom discussions, and see where they're thinking, see where their thinking comes from, and hopefully kind of guide their critical thinking. Critical thinking in the classroom is a must. And I've been in the classroom long enough to kind of perfect that, so to speak, a little bit to enhance critical thinking. But the classroom is where I excel and I feel comfortable. I used to when I was first started teaching 11 years ago, I used to tell people that I can teach anything. You know, my hubris was off the chart. But as your instruction goes, as increases your instruction, you find out that you can't teach everything. And I'm not going to pretend I do that anymore. I don't say I teach anything because if I don't know this, I can't effectively teach that in the classroom. So I kind of stay in my lane. And if I don't know anything about business, then I'm not going to tell the business teacher, hey, I'm going to teach this today. That's going to hinder instruction, hinder my effectiveness as an instructor. So that's where I'm going to be for the next 15 years, probably in the classroom, helping students of all ages. And then after that, I want to go help the teacher training programs with incorporating culture into their training. So that's where my desire is. That's where the next projects are in the area that I'm going to go. So in a classroom, yes, right now, 15 years from now, I'll probably be in an administrative role.
You certainly have tremendous direction. I mean, I admire that so much. Wow, that's amazing. And what motivates you on those moments when, okay, you know, you literally have to do the work, but maybe it's a slower day, or you don't feel like it, or something is more frustrating than usual. What keeps you going?
Right now, it's reading. If it's a slow day and I don't have any classes, I always tell my students, hey, don't be surprised if I bring you new information that is relevant to what we're talking about. So I always read the news. I always read, you know, magazines and see if I can find anything that's relevant to what we're going to be talking about the next class period. And usually I do. I find like one or two subjects that I introduce and passionate about talking about that with my students and creating activities or discussions about those two aspects that are components that I found in a magazine or another article. So that keeps me going is to always, you know, add something new to my classes. You know, I've never wanted to be stagnant in the classroom. I've never wanted to teach the same way every semester. I've always wanted to enhance it and change things up to see if it works. I always tell colleagues to, if it doesn't work, find something else, but always try something new. And that keeps me going is finding those new teaching techniques that I can use in the classroom.
How exciting. I mean, that really is transformational, right? You're transforming your own education as well all of the time. Have there ever been any things that surprised you? Have you come across some big surprises in your research or even as you're reviewing and preparing? What surprises you?
What surprised me is when I come across one of my limitations. Mm-hmm. And I've always told colleagues that when you're teaching, teach with limitations, embrace your limitations, because we don't know it all. And that's why I defer to, you know, colleagues that are experts in another field or bringing guest speakers that are knowledgeable about a certain topic. But that surprised me when I come across, you know, one of my limitations in the classroom. And how I kind of refine that is, you know, a lot of administrators will come in once or twice a year to do evals.
Yes.
Well, all fellow colleagues into my classroom maybe once or, you know, every other month or something to evaluate me unofficially to see if they see anything that's lacking in my instruction to students. And when they ask, well, why do you want to do that? Well, if I can bring in an outsider to my classroom and they can walk away with understanding what I'm instructing, then I've done my job. I've made it simple enough to where an outsider who has no idea what we're talking about mm-hmm. can have discussions and say, Mr. Berry taught me this today. I understand what he's talking about. But if they walk away saying, well, Mr. Berry, I didn't understand what he was saying, then I haven't done my job effectively for him or her or they or my students. And that's where my mindset is coming.
I can see that really as an amazing tactic of transformation. I mean, how that kind of thinking and that kind of learning about yourself and what you're doing and outside reflection and all of that does change things for the better. Have you ever found or developed a technique that you absolutely love that you want to have as your trademark?
So I have one that it's kind of abstract, but it's mm-hmm. what guides me in my classroom. So there's an abstract activity that I do where I tell the students that we're going out on a boat. Okay? We're having class on a boat, and it starts to sink, and it capsizes. Okay, we're all sitting on top of the boat with our life jackets on, and we see land about a mile, 2 miles away. And so this is the beginning of the class. So at the beginning of class, my students know nothing about the subjects, about sociology, about diversity. They know nothing. The shoreline is the end of the class, the end of the 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the water is the classroom. So I tell my students that we're going to all jump in. We're going to link together. We're going to jump in. I'm going to guide you. And as you receive the information, as you start to understand it and gain competency, you're going to let go of the line. You're going to let go of somebody. You're start to swim by yourself. As we go through the course, the more knowledge that I disseminate, the more knowledge that I give them, the more fluent in swimming they are, the more effective in swimming to the shore they are. So as we're swimming through the weeks and they're starting to become better swimmers, if I see anybody fall back, then I equate that to not understanding the lesson or the mm-hmm. material. So I'll swim to them and I'll provide alternative methods of learning. I'll provide multiple perspectives. And if they start to understand it, they start to catch up with the rest of the class. So that's how I present the material to them. And as we get to the shoreline, they become that student that I desire that they become at the end of class. So it's all about me following them, guiding them, and make sure that we're all on the same page at the end of 16 weeks.
That's beautiful. That's beyond beautiful. I so much wish I had teachers like you when I was growing up. I think it would have made a tremendous difference in my life. And I'm so thankful that you see the world the way you do and that you care about your students and want them to succeed and learn, but also grow in your teaching. You know, we've talked about how you started and all of the things that you've done for your students. It's wonderful to hear. What's the role of your colleagues in your educational journey?
The role of my colleagues, I emphasize collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
If we can work together on projects or make sure students are on the right direction, that's what I desire. That's why I'm always in constant communication with other colleagues or other teachers that my students have to make sure, hey, are they doing well in your classroom? Is there something you're doing more effective than I am where the student's learning? Can I use that in my classroom to make sure that they're learning at the same rate and on the same level? So colleagues are very important. I know sometimes we don't talk to colleagues on that level, but for me, I'm always emailing, I'm always texting or calling colleagues maybe once or twice a week to just check up on students and see how they're doing. And if there's anything I can do for their classroom or they can do for my classroom, let's work together. You know, that's what we're here for, to make sure our students succeed, but at the same time, not be territorial. We have to find space to make sure we are on the same page.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait until they make a movie about your life and your teaching. You know, we've seen so many movies where, you know, a teacher transforms people's lives, and I think that you're going to definitely be one of those and already are one of those life-changing teachers. And so what teacher do you remember? What teacher changed your life for the better?
It has to be my first sociology teacher in junior college, Mr. Garcia. He's passed on, but he really showed me how culture can be incorporated into the classroom. You know, I was the only Native American student in my first sociology class in junior college, and most of my other students, colleagues or peers in the classroom, were unfamiliar with the Native culture. And he really gave me a space and voice to educate my fellow peers about my culture. And he took the time to learn every one of us our names and not just gave us a number in the classroom. And he was very receptive to our opinions. He was very receptive to our classroom learnings. And if we had issues outside of the class, he would work with us. And that's how I took my cue from him to work with my students like that, because he gave me that avenue to see what a passionate, effective instructor could be when my other teachers, they didn't do that. So he gave me that platform to become friends with him and call him a colleague before he passed on.
That's profound. You know, they used to say, if you want to live forever, teach. And your lessons and your words and who you are all moves forward through the lives of your students and their progeny. And I see that. And I'm so excited for all the folks that get taught by you or even get taught about teaching by you, because I think you're doing something wonderful and revolutionary. People used to say it takes a village. It takes a village to raise a child, right? And my granddaddy would always say, yes, well, around here it takes a tribe. And so how do those of us who are parents, caregivers, their spouses, friends, just whoever cares about a person who is a student at this moment, what can we do to support their learning and their success?
Well, for me, it's about having input, having a collaboration, having that voice, that relationship, the communication with parents and stakeholders and caregivers is to, for example, me. I will make sure my parents and guardians, grandparents, I'll make sure that they have the, you know, avenue and voice to tell me, hey, my granddaughter teaches or learns this way, or they're having trouble in this area. It's about communication on all levels. And that's why I've said before is that I make sure I'm in constant communication with everyone at least once or twice or three times a week so they can inform me about issues going on, inform me of maybe a technique that works in the classroom to benefit learning. So I'm never one to leave anybody out. Every student that's been, you know, taught under me, their parents, and everyone knows that, you know, Kelly's going to talk to us. He's going to be straightforward with us and let us know how they're doing in class. And he's going to ask us, what other ways can the student learn, or is there issues going on? So me, my relationship with the parents and everyone else, I say it's top notch. And I'm always going to continue to do that. I'm never going to deviate from that strategy because it really does help teaching and learning in the classroom.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. All of this is so wonderful, and I'm so thankful that we are having this conversation because I hope that it leads to many more conversations between our friends and our listeners and our communities, because I think it's so, so very important. What do you want us to know that we haven't already talked about?
I probably said this in kind of roundabout ways, but I'm always available to talk teaching techniques with anyone. I'm always available to talk about classroom etiquette or classroom management. And I'm going to give my information, my email at the end of this session that anyone can email me. You know, I'll take the time to respond to emails, even though I do have a lot of my work with on my plate with the doctoral program and my job and presentations, but just know that I will email back. I'll be in communication with anybody that emails me, and I'll take the time to make sure that students are benefiting from classroom techniques.
Well, that's my very next question. How do we contact you? Because I imagine that there are conferences that would love to have you as a workshop presenter. There are folks who need a chapter for their anthology or somebody to write for a textbook or curriculum or just want to talk about these things with you. Opportunities, open doors, we want you to have them all, and we want people to have the benefit of what you have to share. So how do we contact you? How do we get in touch with you?
Sure. My email at K-State is K, D as in Dan, B as in boy, E-R-R-Y at K-State. Oh, sorry. I got two emails, Don. Let me go back to the one I checked the most. So it's kdberry at ksu.edu.
Great. Okay. kdberry at ksu.edu, right?
Yes. Yes. K-State has had two different emails for me, so I used the KSU one. Sorry about that.
Perfect. No, that's perfect. And I just know that you're going to do many great things. You're going to succeed in them all. And there are going to be many people in all walks of life who have been your students, and they are going to transform the world around them because of your teaching techniques and what you do. I am so grateful that you were here with us today. I learned so much from you, and I loved every minute of this conversation, and I truly appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, and I look forward to many more conversations.
Oh, yes. I'm so happy that we are able to share this time with our friends who listen, and that means I need to thank our sponsors, our donors, this network, our friends who listen, everyone who shares on social media. You know, this is a labor of love. We all kind of get together and do the best we can, and yet so many of you help us out and make it all possible. You promote this show. You submit us for awards. You just all kinds of things. People donate. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful always. So to anyone who's ever done anything nice ever for me or for this show, thank you, and God bless you for it. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I can't wait till we're all together next time. But in the meantime, I hope somebody's told you this, but in case they haven't, oh, the Creator loves you, and we do too. I'll see you next time.
And save her. Better believe they get on their knees. They pray hard. They pray hard. And never look back. What the world forgave you. And save her. Better believe they get on their knees. They pray hard. They pray hard. And never look back. Once the world forgave you.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.